Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Matt Kinnear, guest hosting the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Dan Flynn is on vacation. Mark Dixon, though, is back in the house. So that's good news for all the Raiders who had to suffer through me acting like Mark Dixon last week.
You're acting like me?
Yeah.
That's always entertaining. A couple things right off the top. First off, my voice is a little scratchy. I'm a little under the weather. So please bear with me. But I heard you and Dan did a top guitarist segment. And you said the guitarist for Genesis was one of the greatest guitarists of all time. First of all, who is a guitarist in Genesis that you would even... There's Mike Rutherford, Phil Collins, and then the third guy.
See, you're stuck in the 80s. There's this whole era of Genesis 70s where they're, you know, these prog
rock. That was when Peter Gabriel was
giants.
The...
Yeah, Steve Hackett.
Steve Hackett?
Saw him...
Steve Hackett, wasn't he with Yes? What band did he join?
He was also in GTR with Steve Howe.
Oh my God, I remember Hackett. GTR, the most overproduced... When the Heart Rules the Mind was their song.
That was, yeah.
Wasn't it like 18 guitarists were in GTR?
Well, that's why they're GTR, guitar.
Yeah, they had one album, right?
One album and I think maybe one hit, one and a half hits.
Because they sucked. Who was in GTR? Steve Hackett, who else?
Steve Howe, and then I don't know.
Who was Steve Howe? He was
from Yes.
From Yes, okay, there you go. He's a guy that does the Roundabout.
I'm like 20 years younger than you. How do I know more about and like rock the and 70s
roll,
era?
And Rock
music?
And Roll Hall of Fame, he looked angry. Steve Howe being inducted with Yes, right?
Well, he's like 90 years old, so.
Well, he still got up and played, so good for him. All right, anyway. But thank you for stepping in last week and co-hosting with D-Fly.
Unlike you guys, I'm here consistently, so, you know.
Well, pardon us for having other things going on in our lives, Matt.
Well, I don't. Just lacrosse going on for me, and it's finally March.
Mm-hmm.
February is shockingly already in the books. We've had 4 weeks of lacrosse already, and Mark, just overall, lacrosse February. What was some of the biggest stuff that you learned this month?
I think you learn that February results are what they are. You don't get too high. You don't get too low. You try to stay even keel. I think teams are still trying to find their identity. I think the biggest thing when you started the 2018 season was the usual suspects were not at the top of the polls. Albany, Yale, of course you had Maryland up there, which is the reigning national champion. So Duke was the preseason number one after a couple of years not being in championship weekend. So I think it was to expect the unexpected. And you know, Villanova now resides in the top six, top five, depending upon what poll you're looking at. Virginia had a run until they were defeated by Syracuse this past weekend. And you want to talk about not getting too low. I mean, how many people wrote off Syracuse after they lost to Albany 15-3, myself included? I've been saying all preseason that I don't think Syracuse is that good. Well, meanwhile, they've rattled off two straight one-goal victories over Army and Virginia, two teams that started out 2018 incredibly strong. So I think it's a typical February. You had some upsets, maybe not as many as in the past, but, you know, as I said last week, Uncle February is still crazy. He's still that crazy uncle, and you never know what to expect a lot of the times. But now we're into March, and teams are starting to find themselves a little bit. Teams are starting to establish identities. And when you get into week 6-7, I think that's when you start to see that separation. I know people throw the word parity around in college lacrosse. I'm not a big believer that we have parity in college lacrosse. Until you have the equivalent of a George Mason in men's college basketball or a Virginia Commonwealth, even a Butler, for that matter, make it to championship weekend, that's when you can say we have parity in college lacrosse. Obviously, we've had different national champions. Loyola won their first in 2012. Duke's emergence, Denver being there every year now, but there's lineage there. There, you know, Loyola's always been a really good program. Duke was always on the cusp of trying to of breaking through, and they're Duke, you know. Denver's got Bill Tierney, the best college lacrosse coach in the history of the game. So until you have a team from the MAC win an NCAA tournament game, until you have maybe someone from the America East, hint, hint, Albany, make it to championship weekend, so until you have someone other than Loyola from the Patriot really make a run at championship weekend, it could be Army this year. I know Navy made it back in 2004 to the national championship. Yeah, that's when I think you can say, okay, now we can start talking about parity in its truest form, in its truest sense.
And I think we're at a point where, at least in the polls, maybe the top four or five are kind of solidified now as, you know, the best few teams in the country. So we'll talk about one of them first, and that's Maryland. You know, they had a 12-10 win against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, this is a game that Maryland has not played well in over the past few years. They didn't have double-digit goals in this game since 2003. They win this one 12-10. Connor Kelly with 10 points in this one, and he was just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, coming into this game, Maryland had lost four straight to Notre Dame, including last year a 5-4 low-scoring game in South Bend. I think that this rivalry gets unfairly beat up on. When you look at the number of first-team All-Americans that have played on the defensive end for each of these two teams over the last 6-7 years, it's staggering. When you talk about Notre Dame, you got Stephen O'Hara, Matt Miller, Garrett Eppel. Shane Doss, believe it or not, was an All-American goaltender, third team, but still an All-American netminder. And now you have John Sexton, the long-stick midfielder for Notre Dame. Matt Landis, two-time Schmeiser Award winner. Maryland side, you know, Michael Earhart, Goran Murray, two first-team All-Americans. Tim Muller last year won the Schmeiser. Kyle Bernlohr, Nico Amato, two first-team All-American goalies. So, you know, a lot of chicks dig the long ball. But when you get into postseason baseball, what wins it for you? Pitching. So, these defenses have been great, but Saturday was a departure from this rivalry. The teams came out, got after each other real quick. I think it was between the two teams. I'd have to go back and look, but it was 6-7 goals. Joe Beninati and I called this game for the Big Ten Network. And, you know, a couple takeaways. One, Connor Kelly is the best player in college lacrosse. I've been saying it since the preseason.
Wow.
10 points, 3 goals, 7 assists. We're talking 20-yard skip passes. Off his back foot with two sticks in his face, behind goal line extended, running down the alley away from his target. He delivers a rope to his teammate. So Connor Kelly is the best player in college lacrosse. Depth of scoring is something that Maryland's going to need to come through a little bit more as the season progresses, and they got it against Penn with Logan Wisnowskis and Bubba Fairman stepping up. I think defensive midfield is an Achilles heel for Maryland. I think you can attack their shorties and have success. I think Notre Dame did a great job of that on Saturday. Trying to figure out what's going on with Ryder Garnsey at Notre Dame. He did not start the game and was pulled at various points throughout the contest. Ended up with 4 goals, I believe. And when he was on the field, Notre Dame looked to be clicking a little bit more offensively. But after the game, Kevin Corrigan said publicly that was the best he's ever seen Ryder Garnsey play in a Notre Dame uniform. So maybe that helps him turn the corner in terms of his playing time. Brian Costabile and Brendan Gleason were held to double donuts each, 0 points total on the game. So kudos to the Maryland defense for locking down on those two really offensive workhorses for the Fighting Irish. And Dan Morris is a pretty darn good goalie. There was one sequence, I believe it was in the second quarter, where Notre Dame shot the ball on 2-point blank saves. Ball goes down to the other end, and Maryland cashes in. So that's a 2-goal turnaround right there for the Terps. Instead of, I think it was a 2-goal game at that time, instead of being up by 1, they're now up by 3. So long soliloquy there, Matt Kinnear. Dan Flynn normally jumps in and stops me at some point, but I like the fact that you're letting me ramble.
Gotta let the talent talk, right?
Gotta let the dragon breathe, as Ryan Boyle would say. So, you know, look, it's that was a great game. It was an entertaining game, and that's a nice win for Maryland.
You know, Garnsey came into this game, he had more turnovers than he had points, which is shocking to me. You know, I think a lot of people expected him to have one of these player of the year caliber years. And obviously it's still early. Notre Dame's only played a few games.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So who's thinking that is my question. I wasn't thinking that strictly because he tried to transfer
right
in the offseason and he had ultimately stayed. But my concern, I think I said this in one of our preseason podcasts or early season podcasts, was what's the chemistry going to be like with a guy who wanted to leave and for whatever reason came back. What's that locker room going to be like? What's his acceptance by his teammates going to be like? And I don't know if one has anything to do with the other with his reduced playing time, but yeah, anytime you're supposed to be the leader of an offense, the quarterback, and you have more turnovers than points, that's troubling.
Definitely, and that's the thing that we can never know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being outsiders, we can
right.
hear maybe stuff, but talent alone, he's an incredible talent.
Oh my God, he had a couple goals on Saturday where when he gets that, you know, to that little island area in front of the cage, and he's 176 pounds. He gets every pound of that 176 behind those shots. I mean, there were some beauties that he scored on Saturday.
This week in one of our other podcasts, Ryan Cassidy and your coach Brandon Childs actually talk about playing time and you know what a coach, the decisions that go into that, and you know if you're a parent or if you're a player, how to deal with that if you have reduced playing time. So that's definitely worth a listen as well in our IL family of podcasts.
What's that podcast called? You can say a name.
A Coach, a Captain, and a Conversation.
Look at you.
Yeah.
Coach, Captain, and a Conversation. Are you the moderator for that one?
I am not. I just post it.
Okay, who's the host?
Ryan Cassidy, who is
you mentioned Ryan.
Texas
okay.
The Cross News podcast.
It's okay to mention other podcasts on this podcast. We're not like that, so you can name
you're
other.
You're not.
We are company. We're company men.
You're a company man.
We're team players. There's no I in team, but there is an ME, but that doesn't apply to
Dixon.
That does not apply to myself or D-Fly, and it shouldn't apply to you. You can mention other podcasts on this podcast.
Well, that is a great podcast, and a legendary Division I coach recently got in touch with me and said how much he enjoyed it, and so everyone should give that a listen. The next game, though, is Princeton-Johns Hopkins. Saturday night, this was the last game to happen Saturday. Johns Hopkins 16, Princeton 9. You know, I talked in this space last week about how I thought this is a make-or-break game for Johns Hopkins. I think if they lost this game, and I thought it was possible going into it that Princeton could come down here and just outscore Hopkins. That didn't happen, clearly. But I thought if Hopkins were to have lost this game, it would be nightmare time for that coaching staff going to the rest of the season. Really impressed with the way they kind of bounced back there and got this 7-goal win against a Princeton team that is very good, but I think their half-field defense was just very poor in this game.
I would agree with you. This game, what you had to like about this game if you're a Hopkins fan is, again, Hopkins got off to a quick start, much like they did against North Carolina, and then 3-0, and then Princeton scores 4 straight goals, and you're like, okay, here we go again. You know, the team comes out with some energy and some emotion but can't sustain it. And then it was back and forth. It's 6-5 at the half. And then I loved how Hopkins came out in the third quarter and scored 3 straight goals and basically took the game over. I thought they did a really good job of establishing, putting their stamp on it, and basically saying you're not going to win this game in our house. And you have to tip your cap to Johns Hopkins. On the individual side, I thought Cole Williams was fantastic. I thought that when he gets to his space, it's almost like clockwork. If he gets to his space, and he could put it on Cage because he struggled with the shooting in the first couple of games. Man, he's establishing himself as maybe one of the go-to guy on Hopkins' offense. Dan and I have talked throughout the season of where who's a leader on Johns Hopkins' offense. When the chips are down and you needed somebody to make a play, somebody to step up, who is that go-to guy? Who is that leader? It could ultimately be Cole Williams. I mean, I know you have the experience of Shaq Stanwyck, Joel Tinney, but it could be Williams.
One of the things that I really liked was Coach Petromala's quote post-game where he said, you know, Coach Benson and I, you know, the offensive coordinator, talking with Joel Tinney to be more inclusive in this offense. And that's something I really think you saw with a guy like Cole kind of stepping up and Joel letting the game come to him a little bit more. You know, obviously, I think he's that guy in a dire situation that you can rely on. But I think he let the game come to him a little more and let the players around him kind of take advantage of that opportunity.
I'd agree with that. And it's not that Tinney's a selfish player. It's just his style of play doesn't really get a lot of guys involved. He's one-handed. He's left-hand. He tries to get underneath guys. He tries to duck underneath guys. You know, so it's not like his stick is always up to make that one more or to move the ball. So I think that's a great point by the coaches. To what you said about Princeton's defense, yeah, if I'm the Princeton coaching staff, I'm not real happy, especially with the last 6-7 minutes of that game where Hopkins, it seemingly just looked like they waved the white flag and were letting Hopkins get to the spaces and deliver shots. And I mean, I know it's hard. It was a chilly night and, you know, you're kind of getting your butt whooped and nothing's going your way, but yeah, you got to step up and put an effort in, have a little bit of pride. And, you know, I thought Princeton could have done a better job, typically, you know, particularly at the end of that game. In that regard. So,
you remember this game last year? How shocking that was?
Oh, yeah.
Princeton came in and bullied Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, it was like 9-0 before you could even, you know, get something to drink and sit on the couch.
Austin Sims had 6 goals and an assist in that game. He was 0-for-9 shooting the ball in this one. On the flip side, Philip Robertson is an attackman for Princeton. I don't think a lot of people know about him, but he's perfect on shooting. He's, you know, he's only shot the ball 8 times this year, but he's 8-for-8, 2 goals and two goals on 2 shots in this one. So Princeton, on one hand, this guy who you think can be a go-to scoring talent, you already have this distributor in Michael Sowers, but you know, he goes cold, but you know, there's some other people there. There's some other personnel that you can rely on as well.
Well, Sims is a creator, and Robertson is a finisher. Mm-hmm. And that's not, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I like Robinson's shooting stroke. I mean, it's just like a, it's a little Mac O'Keefe-ish as a righty. You know, the catch and that quick underhand delivery that he can have. But you know, look, it just wasn't Princeton's night. Give Hopkins credit. You defend the knowns. You know, Kevin Corrigan said that to me before the Maryland game. And it was the combination of Connor Kelly and Jared Bernhardt that, you know, tore the Irish defense up. And they didn't defend the knowns. Hopkins defended the knowns in this game. You know, they held Sowers in check. They kept Sims off the goal scoring sheet. So kudos to the Blue Jays with a big win.
Going to unknowns, Syracuse getting the win against Virginia, a 1-goal victory. And it was a freshman who stepped up for Syracuse in this game. I went to it myself. Dan Abern and Casey Vock took a road trip down to Charlottesville, Virginia.
How was that?
It was well. The car ride was fun.
That's what I'm talking
that's
about.
That's what you're talking about.
I mean, what? Give us a little flavor.
We just kind of, you know, we just kind of put a quarter in Casey and let him talk for 3 hours. And
did
then
you even
there.
Have to put a quarter in him? I mean, Casey,
just a nickel. This
Casey
time.
Is entertaining as anybody's ever met in the lacrosse world.
Casey, one of my best friends in the sport, former Inside Lacrosse employee. He currently works for 3D.
Now,
Rising.
Why do you have to qualify that? Say he's one of my best friends in the sport. Can he be one of your best friends? Period. Or well, you only have lacrosse in common.
Well, I've still got to hold it against him for missing my wedding. Or let me rephrase it. He came to my wedding wearing a Syracuse lacrosse T-shirt.
What?
After the end of it had already. So basically, we're all packing up the stuff from the reception, and he showed up.
Yeah, but that's what you, I mean, I know that would be up, but that's when you got to be like, that's just classic Casey Vock.
That's what he does. So it was a great trip, and it was a great game. You know, it was a.
And you went with Abern, too?
And Abern was there, too.
Abern, all right.
So it was.
How much did he talk about Maryland? Did he talk about Maryland a lot on that trip?
He talked about social media a lot.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Casey was getting on him for being a millennial. So that was the topic of conversation the whole way down.
Okay.
Tucker Dordovic, man. 4 goals,
wow.
Game winner. Really impressed with his poise. You know, that's a situation where, you know, Coach Desko said, you know, he wanted the ball and he wanted the score, which is, I know this sounds silly, but for a freshman, that's really a lot to ask to have that kind of innate desire to be the guy as opposed to just a guy who kind of fits in and you know, disappears because he doesn't do anything wrong. Really, really like Syracuse. I know you said earlier that you weren't as high on them. I think this is a very good Syracuse team that is only going to get better, and I think they're going to compete for a Final Four bid.
I don't know if I go that far, but if you're Syracuse, you got to feel really good about yourselves. And to your point about Dordovic, When he took the shot in overtime, when he scored the goal in overtime, I thought immediately to myself, the size of the stones on this kid are immeasurable right now. And I was thinking about it even after the game. I'm like, you know, to be in Virginia, great crowd on hand. It was loud. It seemed like it was pretty festive atmosphere. Virginia had all the momentum. Not only that, you're coming out of a timeout where a goal was scored. But Coach Desko called timeout to save possession, draw up a final play. Mentally, that can take a toll because you're like, oh, man, we scored that goal. It's coming off the – it's not going to be put up on the board or it's coming to however you want to look at it. And then to go back out there and be able to – everyone was thinking overtime. I was thinking overtime. And then if that game got to the extra frame, all the momentum was on the side of Virginia. But credit Dordovic for ending it. You know, Trumboli with two goals. Long pole Brett Kennedy scored twice, and I thought was a factor all game long. And this is a game where I, you know, once Virginia started getting some mojo in the fourth quarter, they scored 6 goals in the fourth period. You're like, there's no way Syracuse is going to get out of here with a win. There's no way. And then you're reminded when the goal was scored that Virginia's 1-for-23 in their last 24. I don't even know that if it's the exact number. Virginia is for whatever reason, man, they just can't win an ACC game.
It's been like 1,400 some days.
Okay.
Since they've
I know it's like game. In the last like 24, 25 games, like 123, 124. So I think that's going to change, you know, with Lars Tiffany there and the personnel that he has. I thought the loss of Ryan Conrad was big for Virginia. He does so many things for that lacrosse team. And he went out in the first half with a leg injury, it looked like. Don't know a prognosis unless you have one.
It was deflating when Ryan Conrad went out. He was trying to keep the energy up on the sidelines. He was active the whole time. You know, that's a good sign, I think, for his future prognosis is that he was moving on the sideline. He had a little bit of a limp. He had tape on his right knee, and he had ice on his right knee, excuse me. But he was moving. He was active. He was loud. He was trying to get the bench going. But I definitely could feel the bench kind of just take a step back and be like, oh, we lost Ryan when he went out.
It's a big loss.
Huge loss. He does everything on every side of the field. You know, he could have been a guy on faceoffs were so crucial to this game.
Yeah.
Virginia's just been, you know, pretty dominant on faceoffs so far in the young part of the season, but they weren't so in this game. Obviously for Syracuse, we've seen the other side of that story when they get killed on faceoffs, like against Albany. There's just nothing they can do.
Right.
So I think Ryan Conrad, if he was out there on the wings, I think he would have gotten some of those ground balls against these Syracuse poles that we were talking about and given them a few possessions that, you know, a game that this close, obviously one possession could be the difference there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Now, Mark, what was your take on this kind of situation? I was there in person, so I can give my perspective. You know, Nate Solomon hits the goalie kind of as the clock is expiring. Benches cleared a little bit in that. You know, some Virginia players went over to him and kind of knocked him around a little bit. They announced over the PA that Ambrosino and Solomon were ejected from the game. What is your take on kind of what this means going forward?
Well, being an official, I really can't comment on, you know, what went down.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you that the referees have jurisdiction as long as they're there on the field. And the officials in that game ruled that it was an unnecessary roughness call on Solomon hitting Alex Rode as he released the ball as the clock was expiring. But I can tell you some of the chatter that has come out. So at the end of games, when the game's over, what do? You go get your goalie. So, and that was right in front of the Virginia bench. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't.
I'm absolutely incorrect. This was in front of...
They had to cross, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of Klockner right now. So they did have to cross. So, okay, you've got the hit happening in front of the Syracuse bench. Now you have the Syracuse guys running down to get Madonna. The Virginia guys are cross. And when teams have to cross, when things like that go down, I don't care how good of an official you are. There's three of them, and there's 80-plus players now crossing. And the inevitable happened. You know, a lot of pushing, shoving, talking. I do know that there were the majority of players were doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Both coaching staffs were doing the right thing, trying to separate guys, get them away from each other, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, the two players that were ejected did something in the referee's, you know, mind that warranted that call. It's my understanding. I thought it was the ACC office would review the film. In everything I've seen written, it's the NCAA judges it. I can tell you as an official, leagues review plays like that. So if, let's say the officials did not throw a flag on Solomon for that hit, the league could look at that and say, that should have been flagged. That should have been called a penalty. That should have been taken note of. That falls back on the officials in that game, and there are repercussions for the officials. So much like high hits where it's, okay, better safe than sorry, you got to call things because if you don't, the tape doesn't lie. And had that contact, whatever you want to call it, been reviewed by the league or the NCAA or the powers that be, and they say, that should have been a flag. That should have been called, and it's not called. It falls back on the officials. So, you know, the referees are just there to adjudicate, to player safety, manage the game, et cetera, et cetera. Their jurisdiction does not end until they leave the field. And obviously they were still on the field of play because the game had just hit triple zeros.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but hopefully it does.
No, it makes perfect sense. And you know, I think the thing that people are that we're still seeking clarity on is both coaches were kind of not completely sure if they know there's a suspension involved. You know, there's a one game suspension. They weren't sure if that means it has to be a league game that they're suspended.
That I don't know.
Well, it was what we were kind of seeking clarity on as of recording this. So, you know, that's kind of the big question. Obviously,
We're recording this, I think Virginia's getting set to play Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
So the Virginia player would be theoretically potentially suspended for Manhattan.
And he is suspended for Manhattan.
So he is. So that means the Syracuse player then might be or is suspended for Johns Hopkins, which is their Syracuse next game.
Which is Syracuse's next game. And lacrosse, you can't put time back on the clock. You know, what if there was this is just a completely outside the box idea here. What if there was a scenario in which Solomon was able to be penalized for a minute and they basically give Virginia an extra man opportunity to end the game? Just an outside the box rule opportunity.
Again, that would be something to take up with the rules committee. I guess like in football.
Because if you're Virginia, you'll obviously,
you'll take it.
You'll take it.
And
if you're Syracuse, you're thinking right now, I'd rather have a player suspended where I can prepare for a week than this juggernaut of an offense get an opportunity to just, you know, one more chance to score a goal.
Yeah.
It's such a limited.
Well, and you don't have replay in college lacrosse either. But you do have video review by a conference, by the NCAA, whatever the case may be on things of this nature. So, that's interesting, but yeah, I don't see a situation like in football, a game can't end on a defensive penalty.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll change in the sport of lacrosse, with everything that the rules committee is going to have on its plate come August.
I don't know.
But I mean, there could be discussion on, because that is a point of emphasis here, bench decorum, and it's predominantly one language, making sure the F-bomb doesn't get thrown out verbally. And then two, keeping coaches off the field, because coaches have a tendency to creep onto the field and crowd that box area, the substitution area. Will this fall under bench decorum where teams are not allowed to go get their goalie, you know, until the referees maybe can get to the middle of the field and then say, okay, now you guys can cry. You know, it's almost like Christmas morning. Okay, I went and checked, and then Santa's been here. Okay, guys, go downstairs.
One last thing, don't want to harp on this too much, but one thing I haven't seen brought up, and clarify me if I'm wrong on the rule, Rode is you know, throwing that ball down the field, and Solomon's going in for the hit. I understand why Solomon was going in for the hit, because even if the clock expires and Rode has shot
that ball,
that's still a live ball.
Oh, yeah.
And if it goes in the net, it's a goal, even if the clock has hit zero.
Sure.
So I don't know if in the heat of the moment that's what Solomon was thinking, but, you know, that's, you know.
He was just trying to make a play. He was trying to make a play. I mean, who are we to say it was this, that, or the other thing? He's just trying to prevent the Virginia goalie from, you know.
And he has no idea if there's 1 second, 2 seconds, a half a second left.
And look, if Rode throws that ball down the field, or any goalie or any defensive player, that is a live ball until it's stopped. Now, the rule is, if it deflects off of an offensive player and goes in the goal, no goal. Deflects off of a defensive player and goes in, that is a good goal. But there's a lot to consider, because it used to be, and the referees have to hold their whistles, because when that clock used to hit 000 and the ball wasn't fully across the goal line, that's it. Time's up. We're finished. Now it's like basketball. You have to see where the ball is going to end up. And, man, how many times last year in the CAA tournament alone did we see buzzer beaters on fluke stuff? So, that's the rule.
We weren't, lacrosse didn't end Sunday night this week, which was we were kind of treated to a Monday afternoon top 10 game.
Yeah.
Number 4 Denver versus number 9 North Carolina. Denver won this one 10-6. Trevor Baptiste was only 12 of 20 on faceoffs going against UNC's Charles Kelly. It's just crazy that anytime this guy doesn't have a, 75% day, it's
75% day. It was 100% against Cleveland State.
He is just setting a standard that is just absolutely unfathomable for faceoff specialists. And obviously TD Earlin over at Albany is matching him.
He was perfect against Cornell.
He was perfect
on Sunday
in a game where Albany didn't quite show its best there.
Right.
But Denver won this game. The only loss they have is to Duke so far on this young season. First loss for the Tar Heels. Tar Heels, kind of countered the Pioneers. They played some zone, and I think people maybe were expecting a little more explosive of a game here. But it kind of just devolved into a little bit of a defensive stalemate.
I was surprised that Carolina played zone on Denver just because they can shoot the ball so well. Man, they got some guys that can bring it. Supinski and Walker and Jackson, and man, they can shoot the ball, and they got great balance. I think their first seven goals of the game were scored by seven different players. So this is a Denver offense that's predicated on ball movement, quickness, and great shooting. And all of it was on display against North Carolina. Again, Denver's just not a team I zone up because I don't know the capabilities of them running by you. But then again, Carolina's had some trouble defensively. A couple of the Denver goals in the first quarter were off of cuts and great feeds and, you know, on-the-run shooting. So maybe that's why they went into the zone, and that's probably why the game did slow down. It was 10-6. But Carolina's still a good team. Got to tighten some things up on the defensive end of the field. You got to give Kelly and his wings credit for being able to neutralize, quote-unquote, Trevor Baptiste in this one. But Denver's impressive. They are impressive offensively. And early, the referees were putting shot clocks on them because they do possess for so long. And that, you know, look, I mean, that's a subjective nature of the shot clock. Are you defending, or I'm sorry, are you attacking, or are you just dilly-dallying and trying to kill the clock? And, you know, a lot of times people say, well, you got to reward the defense. No, you don't. You don't have to reward the defense. It's penalizing the offense for not trying to create. A good game and another. I mean, that's a big win for Denver. Carolina tastes defeat for the first time after living dangerously in their first four or five wins.
You know, I'm really impressed with Denver's ability to just close out this game. You know, they had the lead at halftime and were kind of able to manage the game in the second half to lead to that win, something they weren't able to do against Duke in their lone loss of the season.
Right.
So just an impressive kind of coaching performance.
Sure.
You know, from this guy named Bill Tierney, who's a pretty decent coach.
Yeah, he's only won, what, seven rings? So,
yeah, he's just, you know, some guy out in Denver.
Right.
Dixie, some other games, some notable results here is Penn State and Penn. You know, this was a 10-7 Penn State win. I know you're very familiar with the Big Ten and what they can do. Penn is kind of coming off that huge win against then number one ranked Duke, but you know, like we've seen so many times, faceoffs can tell a story of a game. Basically just on their own. What did you see from this one?
I didn't see a whole lot of it, to be perfectly honest with you. So really, all I can say is a huge bounce back win for Penn State after losing to Robert Morris, a game that no one anticipated the Nittany Lions losing. So they've already got two L's on the season, and to come out against a team like Penn and perform the way that they did to get back on track, you got to feel good if you are Jeff Tamburini and his team. I think against Robert Morris, offensively, they were a little selfish. They were a little disconnected, and I think in this game they tightened that up a little bit, shared the ball more, which is really Penn State lacrosse, and got the W.
Gerard Arcari, 18 of 20 on faceoffs, another one of these just absolutely mind-boggling stat lines that we saw from faceoff specialists this weekend, and it's just the classic Penn coming off of the, you know,
the high,
Penn State coming off of the low. I think you kind of know most, 9 times out of 10, which team is going to come out firing in that scenario.
Well, but, you know, you got to realize, too, Penn was only one game removed from getting shellacked by Maryland, so it's not like they're infallible. I think this Penn State just executed better in this game and got the win.
Another one, Marquette with an... Marquette had one of the more interesting weekends in college lacrosse. So the Midwest,
talk about highs and lows.
Highs and lows in a span of 48 hours here. Midwest Lacrosse Classic was held at Detroit Mercy. Friday night, Marquette beats Ohio State 8-7 in overtime. Johnny Wagner with the overtime goal, going with his right hand, possibly for the first time he's ever shot with his right hand in his career. And that's coming from him. That's not a knock on him.
Yeah.
That's literally what he said. They followed that up with Sunday. You know, they played Bellarmine, double overtime, 7-6 loss. So you're going from beating a team that people think is, you know, a top 10 team in the country in overtime to the next day, or I'm sorry, 2 days later, an unranked team that nobody saw coming. I don't know how you process this if you're Joe Amplo. The one thing that I take away from this is just they are not scoring goals.
Yeah.
So they have to figure out. I know offense was a concern coming into the year. That clearly still persists.
And I think this speaks to the youth of this team as well. You mentioned the precocious nature of Syracuse and they're being able to get it done. You know, Marquette, the big win over Ohio State, overtime, got to feel really good about yourselves. And then you lose the game 2 days later to Bellarmine. You know, look, it's day by day. It's game by game. It's day by day. Everything takes on a new personality in and of itself, and you have to stay focused and you have to execute. And I know that's a lot of coach speak, but really, at the end of the day, that's all you can really chalk it up to.
Johnny Wagner and Anthony Orsini are their kind of two main threats,
yeah.
You know, offensively there. In that game that they lost, they took 14 shots, but between the two of them, only a goal.
So yeah, I mean, look, Joe Amplo came to Marquette from Hofstra. And this Marquette team has a lot of the personality traits that those Hofstra teams did. Tenacious defense. They face off fairly well. They get okay. You know, they get goaltending that can keep you in games. It's just offensively, it's tough to generate. And that's pretty much been the identity of Marquette since Joe Amplo's been there. He's done a magnificent job. But in games where you just need one or two extra goals, they've got to find a way to score those.
Congrats to Bellarmine and senior Brian Wall, who was kind of the overtime.
Is it Bellarmine, Bellarmine? What is it?
I go back and forth.
I've heard it pronounced so many different ways.
I think
ways.
It's Bellarmine, and I just misspoke okay. This last time.
That's all right.
Brian Wall, the hero. He scored the overtime game winner, and this is a young team as well, so he's kind of a leader for that team. So kudos to him for kind of stepping up in the right time like a leader should do.
Right on.
The game that I was at on Saturday, you know, Saturday I covered this game before going down to Virginia on Sunday.
Real quick on Ohio State. But Ohio State, like, you don't want to say this was bound to happen, but it was bound to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They won a game against Jacksonville in overtime the week before that they should not have won. And they come out and they lose to Marquette in overtime. And that's no, look, that's no dishonor there. I mean, Marquette's a good lacrosse team. And then they win by one against Detroit Mercy on Sunday. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, Ohio State's not really that good. And, you know, look, they lost to Marquette, and they only could beat Detroit Mercy. Hey, it's better than losing by one to the Titans. So they were able to figure it out a little bit and just get out of there with some wins, and now they move forward. They got Towson this weekend, and that should be a good game.
Ohio State-Towson, you know, it's not a game that we have on our list to talk about here, but
so the Big Ten Network, 4 o'clock
on the
Saturday.
Big Ten Network, and could there be a game that's two more similar teams in the sense that we know they're well-coached, they're built on defense, and we all think that they're going to get better throughout this season.
Sure.
You know, they're kind of one of those programs that even if they're a little bit down right now, I think everyone has faith in them to turn it around. So I'm just very curious how that one's going to go.
Yeah, me too. And when you talk about these teams, like we said, built on defense, last year played in a frozen tundra of Towson University in the regular season. It was like 6-3, I think, Ohio State won. And then in the national semifinal game, that was actually a really entertaining contest between those two teams. And Towson had that game in control until they hit a pipe on extra man, of all things. The penalty expires. Ohio State midi comes, picks it up. 4-on-3 break. They stick it. And then the rest of the momentum went Ohio State's way. So, I mean, this is a game, you know, Trey LeClaire and Jack Jasinski from Ohio State are the offensive noteworthy guys. And then Towson's starting to figure it out with John Mazza and Tim Monahan and Maloof is having a decent season, but that's a team that both these teams are struggling to score goals consistently right now. So it'll be a good matchup on Saturday.
Really quick, the game that I was at Saturday, Villanova 13, Delaware 12.
You're at all the Villanova games. You're quickly becoming a Villanova roadie, a wildcat groupie.
It's funny because
I love it.
I live north of Baltimore, so basically all the Philadelphia teams are my area. So a few years ago when Drexel made their run, I was the Drexel guy. Villanova's been that team this year, you know, ranked number 5 in the country. 13-12 win, Christian Cuccinello. You just can't say enough good things about him. 7 goals. The ability to just take over a game. I don't think Villanova wants him to have 7 goals in every game. I think
they want that to be
very much more balanced. But
you take what you can get.
I came away a Delaware fan after this one. I think they're a really good program, and I think Coach Ben DeLuca, you know, the turnovers, you know, some of the sloppiness, just the, you know, the kind of head scratching plays, they weren't there in this game, and the Villanova staff was very clear that Delaware, they think, is a top 20 caliber program that they just beat.
Well, everybody keeps saying Delaware's a sleeping giant. Now that you have DeLuca there, and you can recruit out of the tri-state area in addition to the rest of the country, and so I think Delaware is a team that is going to turn some heads this year, but the future is incredibly bright. But right now, Villanova, again, they're sneaking up the polls, 6-5, depending upon what poll you look at, and you know, and are doing it with a backup goal on netminder as Matt Barrett gets healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And they've got an offense that's a little top heavy right now, but you got guys that can step up and make plays when necessary. So a great start for the Wildcats. I mean, where Denver is everybody's favorite in the Big East, you know, will Villanova be the Marquette of 2018, the one that can sneak up on Denver and upset them? Remains to be seen, but you got to feel good about the way these guys are playing right now.
The Big East is definitely a dogfight this year. If you're in the Big East, you're going to need your Trimino protein infused.
Never mind
water.
The Big East needing their Trimino. The inside of the cross offices need a refill. We need a refurbishment of Trimino because that stuff's awesome. And the refrigerator is empty of Trimino right now as we speak.
Right. We only have Coke and Red Bull in our fridge right now.
And it's unacceptable.
So
unacceptable.
We gotta kind of get some people on the phone here and get that sent to us. It's protein infused water, 7 grams of whey protein, and essential B vitamins. It fuels your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout, or before or after a podcast.
Tastes great. Or after a broadcast.
Yeah.
I'm going to have
some this weekend.
Got to have my Trimino before the Albany, Maryland, #1 versus #2, 12 noon, Big Ten Network.
Make sure you're watching that and drinking some Trimino. It's good on the couch, too.
Right on.
7 delicious flavors, citrus, orchard, raspberry, limeade are 3 of the newest. You can grab it at CVS or buy a case on Amazon.com. Increases energy and endurance and curbs your appetite. Play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. Mark, something that is so good is this weekend's matchup, Maryland versus Albany. And those are 1 and 2 in the Maverick media poll. Let's talk about the Maverick media poll. I'll run through really quickly the top 10 teams.
Go ahead.
From the Maverick media poll, number 10, Yale. Number 9, North Carolina, and this was on Monday before their game against Denver. 8, Virginia. 7, Loyola. 6, Syracuse. 5, Villanova. 4, Denver. 3, Duke. 2, Maryland. And 1, Albany, with that gap becoming more narrow after Albany's close call against Cornell. Mark, let's talk about your top 10 a little bit. What are some of the changes, and can you run us through it?
Well, if you listen to our podcast, you know my top 10 is always a nightmare every week because I write it down on a piece of paper. So I can't tell you who moved where, but I've got #1, Maryland, 2, Albany, 3, Denver, 4, Duke. And come to think of it, I probably should have had Duke in front of Denver just because of the Blue Devils' win over the Pioneers. But you can't discount the loss that Duke had to Penn. It's got to have some weight to it. So hence, Duke is #4. Villanova 5, Yale 6, Syracuse 7. And Syracuse jumped in my poll from, I think, like 15 or 14 all the way to #7. Virginia drops to 8. Loyola moves back into my top 10 at 9. And Notre Dame sits at #10. I think I had Notre Dame like 9 or 8 last week, and they only fall a notch or two. They gave Maryland all they could handle in College Park. I think just outside my top 10 is North Carolina, Army, Rutgers, couple other teams, but that's my top 10.
Interesting. I had Syracuse #5.
Did you?
I had Army as my #18 in the country. I'm really high on Army.
You have Army at #8?
#8.
#8?
8.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe in the Black Knights.
Sure you do. Obviously you do.
Hi, this is Mike from Rhode Island. When you're watching or streaming games, there's truly a wide range of announcers calling them. What are your pet peeves when it comes to announcers, and what's an ideal broadcast sound like? Thanks.
So, Mark, our reader question this week, you know, Mike from Rhode Island just asked us via the conference call line, what makes a good lacrosse broadcaster? You have a big one this weekend of Maryland versus Albany. What do you want people to hear from you? What makes a great broadcaster?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, you have to have fun. You have to enjoy what you're doing. You have to convey that to the audience, because if you're not having fun, if you're being negative about the product that's in front of you, why are people going to want to watch? You know, why are they going to bother spending any time watching your broadcast if you're just going to, you know, complain about this or that or the other thing? So I think the first thing is have fun and enjoy it. Secondly, you just want to, for me, it's being explaining what's happening on the field. You can't have an agenda. I mean, obviously, we think this Maryland-Albany game is going to be fast-paced, high action, a lot of offense. A week ago, we thought Maryland-Notre Dame was going to be half field, trying to figure each other out 6-on-6, and it was not. You have to be able to adapt to that. You can't be stuck on a narrative. You can't be married to, this is what I prepared for, so this is what I'm going to try to shoehorn into the broadcast. The second thing is, or the third thing really is be original, be organic. Don't have canned phrases. Don't have canned stuff. You know, the best play-by-play guys that I look up to, Mike Patrick, Al Michaels, my broadcast partner, Joe Beninati, things are just organic. Like his goal calls, their goal calls are organic, and they come from you're not going to hear a tired phrase or someone else's words when they make calls. I think that's huge. And just let the game breathe. Let the game unfold. The players are the stars. If you're a play-by-play, your analyst is the star. You have to set your analyst up to be successful. And if you're a play-by-play, player identification, so a little bit of backstory, if you have to, is good to know. So those are some of the things top of mind that make a good, not just a good lacrosse broadcaster, just a good broadcaster, in general.
Glad you gave the shout out to Joe B, my favorite of all time, being a Caps fan. Yeah, I love
Joe
B.
Wow. You should, he's doing a bunch this year, so you should come to one of our games. And have you ever met Joe?
I have. I actually
met
him.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I threw some lacrosse stuff, but the first time I met him was randomly in the gift shop at the Kettler Ice Complex where the Capitals train.
Look at you.
So,
wow.
Just a random interaction.
Just scare the hell out of him? Joe B!
I was a fanboy.
So. You're like, now you're off Joe B and you're on Villanova lacrosse. So, as a viewer, what makes a good lacrosse broadcaster in your opinion?
The thing that you mentioned, excitement, positivity. It's my free time if I'm watching a sporting event. I understand there are times to bring up the issues, but for the most part, I think you need to entertain me. Watching this 2 hours out of my life, I want to be happy and entertained. So be positive, make the game feel exciting.
Right.
Especially lacrosse, where sometimes we have the problem with, some empty seats. I need to feel the excitement coming from you, or else I'm going to change the channel and put on softball or whatever else is on TV.
You would honestly change the lacrosse game and watch softball?
Well,
I'm learning a lot about you in this podcast, Matt.
The casual fan would turn on softball.
You were talking in general.
I got you. So.
Good points.
Thanks,
Mark. You can never keep a straight face when you do this podcast.
You're just hilarious.
We like to have fun.
Yeah.
D-Fly and I like to have fun.
Well, another thing we like to do is take all of our old gear, put it on Sideline Swap, and get some money for it. I'm currently selling some old Pearl Jam memorabilia. That's not a Sideline Swap thing.
Oh, boy.
But I know a former Division I athlete like Mark Dixon has closets full of
I hold on to everything. Ask my wife. She gets on me constantly. I am a pack rat.
So all of the more athletic listeners to this podcast than myself, buy and sell your gear on Sideline Swap. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, gloves, up to 70% off. Get some hard-to-find college gear, some one-of-a-kind custom stuff that you will not get anywhere else. All purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Download the iPhone app today and visit sidelineswap.com. 5 to watch for this week. There's a clear-cut number one game that we're all excited for. You get the privilege of being involved in it and calling this game. Albany at Maryland, number one versus number two. Albany lost two games last year to the Terps, including in the NCAA quarterfinals. But, new year, new personnel. What do you think we're going to see in this game?
I think you're going to see a lot of fun. I think this game is one that everybody's had circled on their calendar since the schedules came out, since the television schedules came out, and a lot of anticipation around this one. I think it starts at the faceoff dot. Shockey for Maryland's playing great as of late. Erland has established himself. We'd be talking about T.D. Erland as the best faceoff man in the game if it weren't for Trevor Baptiste. Albany's only lost 7 total faceoffs this season. They're winning 90% of their faceoffs. So that's going to be really interesting. I think the goaltenders are compelling in this game, both underrated, both underappreciated because both teams can score goals. And then you've got the offensive stars all over the place. Connor Fields, Tahoka Nanacoke. Tahoka's ready for his close-up. His national television debut is this Saturday, 12 noon, on Big Ten Network. And then you've got McClancy and the Bergmaster brothers in the midfield for Albany. For Maryland, Connor Kelly. I think he's the best player in the game right now. We'll get to see him go up against Albany. How do they scheme for him? Jared Bernhardt has taken the keys of the offense. He's the offensive leader for Maryland in terms of directing things. Tim Rotance, you can never sleep on him. So you just have players all over the field. I think where these teams will be attacked is at the short stick defensive midfield position. I think that is the Achilles heel for both of these teams. Notre Dame had success dodging against the shorties and being productive against the shorties of Maryland this past weekend. Cornell did the same thing to Albany. How will the defensive packages be? Coach Gleason for Albany, Coach Bernhardt for Maryland, how are they going to scheme defensively? Because ultimately you're looking to get the ball on the stick of Fields, Nanacoke, Kelly, Jared Bernhardt. You know, those are the guys you want making plays for them. Defend the knowns. There is so much to look forward to in this game. It's not even funny.
T.D. Ireland, you mentioned his incredible start, and the Maryland game last year was not his best moment, the quarterfinal game. I don't think there's a kid as competitive as T.D., so I think he's probably had this game circled on his calendar, since May of last year, and he's going to come out firing. So we'll see how that matchup goes. Rutgers at Princeton, another Big Ten program playing the Ivy League in Princeton. Yeah. Rutgers has been, they had the loss to Army, but they've been winning games very quietly.
That Rutgers-Princeton game, I don't think that's until the 18th. No, that's Syracuse. I'm sorry, that's Syracuse-Rutgers. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. No, this was I love the fact that this is the Garden State rivalry. Rutgers won this game last year. It was in the middle of March, and there was a snowstorm, so it was postponed, moved back a day. But both these teams, Princeton licking their wounds after losing to Hopkins. Rutgers comes in. They had a nice win over the weekend against Brown, but I still think they haven't really found themselves. So I think it's two teams. Rutgers looking for more of an offensive identity. Princeton looking for what they're really made of on the defensive end.
One of the greatest rivalries in college, the greatest rivalry in college, lacrosse, Hopkins at Syracuse. Johns Hopkins just can't win in the Carrier Dome lately.
Yeah, I think it's been 11 or 12, 13 years since Hopkins has won a game in the Carrier Dome. This is always a fun trip because the Carrier Dome is a great place to play lacrosse. It's a tremendous atmosphere. It is one of my favorite places to broadcast a game from because of the energy, the great sight lines. So Syracuse is riding high. They feel really good about themselves. Two straight one-goal victories. Hopkins has some momentum after the win against Princeton. I think this game is going to come down to who can defend better, who can defend the other team better. I think Hopkins is going to have the advantage in the faceoffs. I think Moreland's done a great job. I think that both are going to try to push transition and establish early offense when given the opportunity. Goaltending will be big in this one as well. Madonna for Syracuse, Turnbull for Johns Hopkins.
Denver at Notre Dame, the Pioneers coming off this Monday night victory. That is going to kind of give them some momentum. Notre Dame is licking its wounds from a 12-10 loss to Maryland. But this is as good as it gets, two programs that really have aspirations to go deep into May. What's your take on this one?
Well, this is a series that's been defined by either one-goal games or overtime. And that script was broken in the quarterfinals last year when Denver just waxed the Fighting Irish. So Notre Dame comes into this game off the loss to Maryland. Denver riding high after beating Carolina. I like Denver in this game simply because they're going to dominate the faceoff. Notre Dame was not successful against Maryland winning faceoffs, and that's a trouble area. Notre Dame also might have a little bit of a goalie situation. Their starter Schmidt was pulled against Maryland. So if Notre Dame can clean it up in goaltending and at the faceoff dot, they're going to be really, really good. Right now they're just really good. But I just see Denver with Baptiste winning faceoffs, the pressure that they're going to be able to put on Notre Dame offensively. How is this game going to be officiated as well? Notre Dame doesn't play zone. They're going to come after Denver. They're going to match up. So how quick will these officials be to put the shot clock on the Pioneers?
Our last game to preview this weekend, Duke at Loyola. Loyola has won four straight since they lost that season opening game against Virginia. You know, a Virginia comeback in that game. Duke bounced back from its loss to Penn by beating Richmond pretty handily. We're going to have two Tewarton candidates on the field in this one, Pat Spencer for Loyola and Justin Gooding for Duke. What do you think is going to happen in this one?
I think it's going to be a really good game. And I think I like Duke on the road simply because I feel like they've got a little bit more firepower. I think Loyola is going to have the advantage at the faceoff dot, but you've got Gutterding against Spencer are the two individuals that highlight this. What defense is going to be able to play better? I think Loyola has the better defense team-wise. Individually, it might be Duke. So then you go to the midfield, okay? Who's going to be able to carry the mail in this one? Who's going to be able to clear successfully, get the teams from defense to offense, and then execute up top? And I think in that regard, Duke may have a slight advantage. But this is going to be – Duke Loyola is always entertaining. It's always an athletic contest. I think it's going to be a really, really fun game. I see the Blue Devils slight favorite in the slightest of margins. But I think it's going to be a fun game.
You know, I don't think anyone would be surprised if all of these games that we just talked about are all one-goal games.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Mark, so Dan left us some notes, you know, when he's out on vacation, cruising right now. He said, Forgive and Go, some sort of Oscar movie theme. I couldn't tell you the last movie I saw in the theater, so I think I'm useless in this.
Well, my wife and I saw the movie It for our anniversary back in October, so that was the last time we went to the movies. I think the biggest thing I can say about the Oscars is, I don't think anybody, 26 million people watched it. I heard this on the radio this morning. 26 million people watched the Oscars, but that is an all-time low. The typical audience, I think last year it hit a low, I think, and it was 30 million viewers. So to lose, to go down to 26 is a huge loss. There's still 26 million people watching it. I think people are sick of Hollywood. I think people are tired of the attitudes. I think they're tired of the holier-than-thou act, telling people how to think, especially in the political arena. And I think it's coming back to bite Hollywood on the butt. Jimmy Kimmel is a prime example. I've been a big Jimmy Kimmel fan for a long time. Not so much anymore. I don't really care which way you swing politically. I don't really care what you have to say about social issues. Kind of what you said earlier about when you turn on a lacrosse game, you just want to be entertained. You want to be engaged. I don't want reality when I go to the movies. I don't want real life when it's about a freaking clown who won't die and is terrorizing children. And these kids strap it on and go after Pennywise. And it's awesome. It's like, cool, for 2 hours, I'm just completely immersed in make-believe. And that's a nice escape from reality. So I'll get off my soapbox, but like that's my, like when I saw the Oscars category, it's like, you know, I did see the movie Get Out. Get Out is a bad film. Like, bad isn't good, man. That's a sweet movie.
I don't even know who hosted the Oscars this year, let alone...
It was Kimmel.
Oh, it was Kimmel.
It was Kimmel.
Yeah, let alone who won any awards. And the last movie I think I saw in the theaters was whatever the last Hunger Games movie was.
What? Yeah. First of all, the fact that you went to see a Hunger Games movie in the theater, those movies suck.
Well, my wife is a big fan.
Okay.
So,
all right, say no more.
The last movie I saw willingly by myself.
You allowed to say it on the air? Is it? Oh, okay, never mind. That's a different conversation.
I paid a quarter for it.
No, yeah. Look at you. All right.
No, I couldn't even tell you. I do have the Blade Runner movie. I purchased it on Blu-ray to watch
the
it.
The new one, 2049?
But I haven't watched it yet. Okay. So that's one of the, I think that was probably an Oscar nominee.
Because I read a lot. So that was like up for, I think it may have won. For like editing or cinematography or visual effects, one of the technology categories.
So whenever I get 3 hours, that's gonna be in there. But
Dan D-Fly did say that the movie, what was it, three signs outside of Missouri or something like that, was a really good movie. Sam Rockwell won for Best Supporting Actor and Frances McDormand won for Best Actress in that film. But I think the Best Picture went to Shape of Water. Which
I never heard of until.
It wasn't filmed in Baltimore, but it was set in Baltimore. So that for that very reason alone, I may watch it. But yeah, year in and year out, I just really, you know, I mean, I'm a guy that grew up on Die Hard and, you know, Star Wars.
Well, I was going to make a give and go.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
In honor of John McClane from BU and his overtime heroics.
Uh-huh.
What was your favorite Die Hard moment as the give and go?
See, but, Flynn and I talk about Die Hard,
but
quite
you guys
a
talk
bit.
About Die Hard
yeah,
too
we
much
do.
To do.
We
it,
do.
So.
Yeah, the for probably the. I don't really have a favorite moment. It was pretty cool at the end of Die Hard 2 when he took the lighter and the trail of the vapor trail of gasoline blew up the airliner, you know, with all the terrorists on it and whoever the Cuban dictator was that was, you know, well, I don't remember his name. But I mean, like seeing the father from Good Times like jump on the screen was pretty crazy as he was a leader of what turned out to be a rogue commando unit. Like that was wild. And Alan Rickman's performance in the first one, I mean, he's just Hans Gruber. Dude, just love Alan Rickman.
Awesome. Well, we're going off the rails here.
Yeah,
join
we
us
are.
Next
that's,
week.
That's what normally happens.
Join us next week for the Die Hard, the first installment of the Die Hard podcast. And Mark, we'll see you on TV on Saturday.
Yeah, can't wait.
I will be somewhere. I'm not sure where yet.
You haven't picked your game?
Haven't picked my game yet.
What is? It seems like everybody and their brother is going to Albany at Maryland.
Yeah, and that's
so. What,
I want
what,
to go to that.
What do you think? Where do you think you're going to end up?
I might go Penn State Cornell. It's held at the U.S. Lacrosse facility up in Sparks,
quick
Maryland.
Quick trip for you.
So
you're not going to go to Villanova?
I'm not. We got a freelancer up there.
Okay, who's Villanova play this weekend?
They have got Penn. So a big game.
At
another big game.
Villanova.
Not sure if it's at Penn or at Villanova.
Either way, it's on the main line.
Either way, it's a main line game. Rough schedule for them. Want to go to Maryland, but we have like 12 people already going to it, so I might go somewhere else.
Right.
So, thanks everyone for listening, and we will see you next week. Dan Flynn will be back with Mark, so it will be a true D-Fly and Dixie podcast.